This meeting is now being recorded.
This is the meeting of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. We're an advisory committee to the Judicial Council. As you've just heard, this meeting is open to the public and is being audio recorded. At the conclusion of the meeting, the audio recording as well as the minutes of the meeting will be posted on the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee website. Those of you who are listening by phone, you do have the committee members who are here by phone have the opportunity to communicate with us. You may have to jump in and we'll try to remember to ask if anyone on the phone wishes to be heard. Those of you who are listening on the public line will not be able to join the conversation. I would remind those who are members who are listening not to put us on hold because we'll hear your lovely hold music. At this point, we are going to take roll of the committee.
Yes. We have Judge Earl.
Here.
Judge Began. Judge Boris. Present. Judge Clay. Judge Cope.
I'm here on the line.
Judge DeSantos.
Here.
Judge Hicks.
Present on the phone.
Judge Masanaga.
Present.
Judge Slough. Judge Walsh.
Present.
Judge Wesley.
Here.
Jake Chatters.
Here.
Richard Felstein.
Here.
Kimberly Fleden.
Here.
Deborah Norrie.
Here.
Mike Planet.
Here.
Mike Roddy.
Here.
Brian Taylor.
Here.
Mary Beth Todd.
Here.
Tanya Ugin Capobianco.
Here.
Chris Volkers.
Here on the phone.
David Yamasaki.
Here.
Renee Chuteau. Judge Renee Chuteau. Judge Good.
Here.
Judge Johnson. Judge Trenacosta.
Here.
Sherry Carter.
Here.
John Fitton.
Here.
Rebecca Fleming.
Here.
Sean Landry.
Here.
And as advisory members, we have Jody Patel.
Here.
Kurt Soderlund.
Here.
Kurt Child.
Here.
And myself, Slavko Fedorovic. Anybody I missed? Very good. We have the agenda before you. We have a call for the minutes, approval of the minutes. Any concerns or questions about the minutes?
Move approval.
We have Judge Walsh to move.
Second.
And Judge Wesley seconding. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimously passes. Thank you. We have public comments. Is there anybody has signed up for public comments? Please step forward to the head of the table there if there's any offered. And we're giving a 3-minute time limit on public comment.
Thank you.
Come on up.
Hi. I'm Leslie Heimov, the Executive Director of the Children's Law Center of California. I would like to thank you for giving me a moment to speak. You do all have a letter from me, I believe, in your materials today. And it addresses both item 4 on your agenda as well as the larger issue of the significant disparities among appointed dependency council funding throughout the state that have been a problem for quite a few years. And it's a problem that instead of getting better is getting worse as we see disparities in filings in different counties, which are completely out of the control, of course, of the court as well as appointed counsel. We have worked diligently with staff and with the governor's office for the past several years, as well as the legislature, and they're continuing to do that in terms of our efforts to bring more funding in general to dependency council in light of the budget crisis of the past 2 years. But in the interim, I'm here to just strongly encourage this body, as well as the subcommittees that I believe are going to be working on this issue, to recognize that even small changes make a big difference for us. In the past, we had sometimes heard, well, we can't do enough, so doing even a little doesn't seem to be a good effort. And I can tell you as the person who's responsible for the representation of 30,000 children in this state, that even a little bit makes a huge difference to my staff, to my investigators, to my lawyers, to the social workers, and to, most importantly, to the children we represent.
All right, Don Clay joining in.
Who have no ability to seek their own counsel or access justice without an attorney who has a manageable caseload. And it is indeed, from our perspective, especially in Los Angeles and some of the other small counties, truly a crisis for those children when their lawyer does not have time to return a phone call or look into an allegation because they literally are representing 300 children at any given moment. It's unconscionable that lawyers are expected to carry those caseloads, and we are here essentially begging for your assistance. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heimel.
Is there any other public comment? Please come forward at this time. All right, we have no other public comment. We can move on to our first issue, which is related to an update on the trial court trust fund and the improvement and modernization fund fund balances. The item is can be found on page 6 with the fund balances on page 7 and page 8. So as you can see, the projected year-end 13-14 fund balance for the trial court trust fund was at $18.6 million, of which there were restricted fund balances related to court interpreters, court-appointed dependency counsel collections, leaving an unrestricted fund balance of approximately $2.7 million. But we still have a $58 million structural imbalance, meaning revenues below our expenditures. Looking at the 14-15 figures, we have an estimated fund balance of $23.5 million, of which $6.9 million is, again, related to restricted items, leaving a $6.6 million fund balance as the end of 14-15. I'd note that that assumes the funding from the budget of 30.9 is included in that revenue total, and the reflects the $22.7 million one-time reduction of unfunded revenue shortfalls in the trust fund that was allocated by the council at the August or the July meeting. Absent the backfill, there would be a projected $51.6 million negative fund balance. I would note that within the $6.6 million fund balance is the estimated approximately $2 million of what are the preliminary amounts above 1% fund balance cap. That is still a process that is yet to be completed and finalized and is to be brought back to the council at the January meeting for finalization. As you recall, the limit on the 1%, any amounts that were carried forward above the 1% would be an offset against your allocation and therefore would remain in the trial court trust fund available for allocation by the council. That is an issue that's before us or later on in the agenda. But again, it's preliminary. We've already had some revisions to that. And we part of the approved council process is that a review committee made up of members of the of SEAC and the Budget Advisory Committee will be meeting and going over those encumbrances and statutory restricted funds that are approved by Government Code 77203 to be excluded from the 1%. And then we would make recommendations to the council about the final allocation adjustments per the statute. I know of particular interest is where did we end the fiscal year and what do we think will be the benefit to the trial courts in addressing the $22.7 million. We know that's a prime concern given that there's every court is feeling the impacts of the reduced allocations of the 22.7. Again, the 14-15 amounts are estimated. The $2 million is subject to change based on the updates that we receive from trial courts as they've closed their books. But there might be interest in seeing what could be done earlier to mitigate the 22.7. I know that's been a concern. It's also a concern of ours as staff to see what we can do as far as getting up-to-date numbers for consideration by the subcommittee. In terms of the Improvement and Modernization Fund, it again is also another one of our core trial court funds, and it ended the fiscal year with a $26 million fund balance. It is projected to have a $2 million fund balance at the end of 14-15. We still are concerned about the management of that fund as it goes forward. You know that we did take action. We were able to solve the current year 14-15 shortfall, but there are needs to develop plans to resolve the 15-16 shortfall. As you can see on attachment 1C, page 8, under column C, it shows a $24 million shortfall, assuming that certain funds continue to go to the trial court trust fund out of the improvement and modernization fund. Column D is consistent with what was recommended to the council and submitted to the Department of Finance about discontinuing the $20 million transfer. You can see that on line 14 of on column D, that assumption there, which still shows us, as of current estimates, a $10.7 million hole that will need to be filled as we enter 15-16 fiscal year. Are there questions?
Let me jump in for a minute here. Relative to the Improvement and Modernization Fund, as you all know, we do have a subcommittee, the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, that is tasked with reviewing the fund condition statements for both the Trust Fund and the Improvement and Modernization Fund and making recommendations at times when we need reductions in our expenditures. I wanted to just update you of some work that's going on behind the scenes, meaning with a small work group to bring a recommendation to this body, and that has to do with the IT programs funded about out of the Improvement and Modernization Fund. About 40% of the Improvement and Modernization Fund is IT-related programs and projects. In order to get an understanding of whether or not we can kind of do business differently related to those IT expenditures, Judge Jim Herman, who chairs the Judicial Council Technology Committee, and I have put together a work group that includes some of our state's chief IT directors, including the chair of the Court IT Management Forum, who is Rob Peterson from Santa Clara, Brian Peterson from Santa Clara, Snorri Ogata from Los Angeles, who's the vice chair, Greg Harding, who I think is from Placer, correct? And Rob O'Young from
Santa Clara.
You got two?
No, not directors. We have one reports too.
Okay. We also have Marcia Slough, Judge Slough, and Sherry Carter participating in those discussions. They'll chair the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. We have ITSO, Mark Dustman, and his folks, and we have invited two CEOs, including Debbie Norrie from Plumas and Lee Kirby from Placer. We included Debbie and Lee because they are small courts that really vitally rely on the IT services that are provided from the IMF fund. So they bring a different perspective. They don't have IT directors. They do it themselves, and they're very dependent upon those programs. So we've gotten together with them and talked about how could we do things differently. What would you recommend? And those discussions are going on. Any recommendations will first be reviewed by the Judicial Council Technology Committee and then forwarded to the Budget Committee if there are recommendations on doing things differently. This is not the first time we've reached out to our IT directors, and we thought we needed their help in coming up with a strategy or game plan, if you will. So that's one thing that we're doing in terms of IT funding. Did you want to add anything on that?
No, other than, you know, as far as what we're doing is, if you recall last year, as we were closing the fiscal year, we, as is the normal process, as you end the fiscal year, looking at whether or not you spent all of your, you know, allocations and whether or not there were prior year allocations that remained available for expenditure that you no longer needed. And so we went through the process and by and large solved the problem of this year's fiscal problem in the IMF with disencumbrances and year-end savings. That's a normal course of business with any project. But in this year, we've been much more active, and we've already engaged all of the office directors in looking at prior year encumbrances to see to what extent there might be ability to score now any disencumbrances. And I think just from the first process over the last month, we were able to, what was previously a little over, almost a $13 million problem, has been reduced down to the 10.7. So we're active in ensuring that if there's any available savings that can be found in the programs due to, you know, just less than anticipated expenditures, that that's shrinking the problem, and we're well aware of it early so that we're not having to consider, you know, substantive and, you know, harmful reductions in program that impact all the trial courts.
There are also, as you know, one of the recommendations this body came up with last year was to no longer transfer that $20 million from the IMF to the trust fund, and the governor rejected that, but there are ongoing discussions with Zlatko and the Department of Finance explaining why that's important to us, and we hope that they will approve that in the next budget cycle, next fiscal year.
Marybeth, Todd, question?
Yeah, I just I appreciate the effort to include both large courts and small courts on this working group. I was going to just ask, is it possible to give the Court Executive Advisory Committee an opportunity to weigh in on the recommendation as well as the Technology Committee?
Yes.
I think that would be helpful.
Yep. Did I see another hand over here, Judge Good?
I have questions about the fund balance statements. I have three sets of questions. First is on line 38, the redevelopment agency. It's shown at 1.778 million and 1.632, but it looks like only 146,000 was actually spent in the last year. What is this line, and how much longer do we expect these RIFs to be active?
It's related to the abolishment of the redevelopment agencies and in establishing a unit within the Department of Finance and an appropriation there. There was an appropriation made to the Sacramento Court because that would be the venue for any of the disputes. And so there's a reimbursement process that the court is engaging with us to spend down that $2 million. I don't know for what's the duration and length of the availability of the of that particular appropriation.
And what happens to that money if it's not all expended on these writs?
I think that it may, it's an appropriation. I don't think it says anything about it referring to the general fund, but we could look into that. I don't have that off my head. I don't know. Patrick, are you aware of that? We have staff.
I think it's
could you come closer so that folks could hear? Come closer so folks on the phone can hear your response.
Could ask if it's statutory restricted. I think it is. Well, it is by the budget. This is Patrick Ballard.
Finance staff.
Yeah, it's a continuous appropriation, and it's from Trial Court Trust Fund, and I believe there's an additional one more year to see. There hasn't been any, we haven't received any reimbursements so far for 14-15. We haven't received any probably for about 6 months, so it might be slowing, you know, wrapping up.
To Judge Good's question, is it statutorily restricted money? I think the budget classified
yes.
it
yes.
as solely for these purposes.
Yes.
Okay. Second question I had is the next line down, 39, is administrative services costs reimbursed by trial courts, and that seems to appear for the first time in year-end 2013-14. What is that, please?
Stephen Chang to help me on that one.
That's a good question. I was doing some research. I'm not, to be honest, perfectly honest, I'm not exactly sure. I think this is monies we had to accrue at the end of 13-14 because we couldn't fully charge the courts at that point in time because their allocations had been fully made. So that's why that appears.
Well, is that money that would be of that courts not needed otherwise?
No, it wouldn't.
Third question is this. When we made a recommendation, when this committee made a recommendation to the Judicial Council not to allocate the $22.7 million shortfall, it was based on an estimate of what the year end would be. It appears reading this fund condition statement that that estimate was wrong, as we knew it was likely to be, because it was just an estimate. Estimates are always not going to be the final number. So it looks to me like there's the hole was not 22.7, of something less than 22.7, what's your best statement of what that number is, that it's less by, and shouldn't we be redistributing that to the trial courts now, since the assumption of the $22.7 million cut allocation was that that was the right number? And I could sure use whatever that number is.
We have uncertainty about that. We know that the unrestricted year-end fund balance for 13-14 is $2.66 million, as you can see on line 41 of column C on page 7. There's still uncertainty about the $2 million, so I wouldn't necessarily run to the bank on that particular issue. So if anything, I would say we could safely look at the 2.66 at this juncture in the fiscal year, because there's still uncertainty about the revenues for 14-15.
When will we tie down what the real $22.7 million number is?
Realistically, not until the 14-15 fiscal year would end. I mean, we wouldn't know final revenues, but we know where we are and how we ended 13-14.
So if the 22 is not 22.7, but 20.1, shouldn't that have been the cut that was allocated to us, and shouldn't we reallocate the 22.7?
At the time that this was brought before, we did not know those specifics, so we couldn't have known that it was that number.
Okay, but we know it now.
Right.
And each one of these courts is hurting very, very badly.
Understood.
And shouldn't we make right what we make it right
the,
now?
Yeah, no, that's the pleasure of the committee, absolutely, to pursue that. And in terms of comfort, how we ended the fiscal year, the 2.660, would be, I think, an appropriate number to consider at this juncture to offset the 22.7.
Does that need a motion?
As we discussed earlier, it would.
Okay, I move.
Do we want to have discussion?
I mean, it might be appropriate to discuss it as a group.
I'll make a motion to start the discussion.
Okay.
All right. I would move that we then reduce the $22.7 million cut that we all took by 2.660456.
Are you comfortable with that? I'm comfortable
about that. In your motion, are you saying how it should be distributed? Is it go back the same way it came out?
Yes.
Pro rata?
However it was done, it was pro rata. How are we divided 22.7?
Right. We agreed that.
That number should have been divided 20.1, and the difference should come back.
I just ask you for a decision.
Is that a second?
I'll second it. Judge Wesley.
Did you amend your motion? Does your motion include that the money would be allocated back the same way it was, the reduction was allocated?
My motion is that the allocation of the $22.7 million cut was made a certain way. Instead of using 22.7 as the number to be cut, we ought to use 22.7 less 2.660. And then that arithmetic should be done again, and the difference returned to the trial courts.
And I would note, we are submitting a deficiency request to the Department of Finance, consistent with the direction of the council, to provide us the 22.7 back to the trust fund. And that is in process, and that is based on updated revenue projections. Ms. Sherry Carter.
I just have a question on revenue projections moving forward. Do we have any kind of an idea of, have you done projections in the future based on historical, and do we have an idea if we're going to have the same problem this fiscal year that we did last? Do we have any idea whatsoever?
So we're looking at all those numbers, and the submittal that we make to the Department of Finance will be based upon two months' worth of figures. So that's all we have that's firm at this point in time. We fully expect to amend that request once we have the numbers for September that are concluded, but that submittal will be joined forward in the very near future to the Department of Finance, with the understanding that we'll amend that and then continue to do revenue projections. So what does the future look like for the balance of the year?
So on those 2 months, when you compared those 2 months to the prior, how did they compare? Are we on track to have an increase? Are we going to continue to have a decrease?
Well, you can see the $2.6 million on revenues of $2.1 billion. That's like almost perfect in the projection world. So, I mean, grant. I mean, if it was $20 million on $2 billion, you know, we start to talk about reasonable, you know, errors. But I think that you were talking $2.7 million on $2.13 billion. That's almost like that. I'd say we get a, you know, a decent grade on that. Unfortunately, the revenues are tracking fairly close to what we projected because we, for the first time, if you recall, we projected a further decline in the budget year to be conservative as part of our submittal to the Department of Finance. And so we are tracking pretty close to that. I mean, anything off by a fraction of percent could be a couple of million on either side of that. And the Department of Finance is very interested in knowing where we're at with that because they've stated that if it's any worse than what we had initially projected, that, that they would be looking at, you know, backfilling that, be it in the current year and the budget year. And that was what I think the Chief Deputy Director discussed at the Budget Conference Committee in June.
Judge Walsh.
I love the motion because we're all hurting and any extra funds would help. But is this the time to do it? Are we as clear as we're going to be about this number, or could it change in 2 months and go into a negative in which case
no,
we're going to have to take it back? Or, and if that's true, is there a better time? But I still like the idea of this is not the time to be overcautious. We're hurting, and we need the money. But if there's a better time to judge, this is pretty much the final figure for the year. Is that when would that better time be?
Well, I mean, if at the time that we take the final allocations of the $2 million, if it's $2 million that's there in terms of overage of the 1%, maybe when we take the issue to the council in January, that might give us a few more months to see where the revenues are going. I mean, I know folks want to know now so they can start to plan to redeploy these resources. So it's a balancing act between early notification of, you know, pieces of this money coming back to the courts and waiting for further refinement. I mean, if I had my druthers, I would wait, but I know you don't want to wait because you have programs that are suffering now. So there's that balance. The 2.66 is what we ended the fiscal year with.
So
that's done. It's a matter of are the revenues coming in 14-15 at a level of expect. Our risk is that if the Department of Finance, if the revenues get worse, will the Department of Finance make up that gap? That's the risk.
Right.
If the 30.9 needs to get bigger because the revenues are getting worse, will they provide us those resources and those revenues? And that won't be known until the May revision when we're finalizing our current year revenues.
I saw David's hand.
Thank you. David Yamasaki. I just had a follow-up question. As what was mentioned, I think all of us would benefit by having a little bit more to work with, but I don't think we've ever lived this close to the margin. It's razor thin with a little bit of uncertainty. I'd say a little more than a little bit of uncertainty. And there may be some issues that come up that may be addressed by this thin reserve that exists. So I'm a little concerned about making a decision right now about distributing that $2.6 million given what's in play here. And the fact that we may end up taking some of the money back, which would be
Absolutely.
Well, in theory, that really is.
Although I like the idea and I would love to have the money, there's that anticipation of what if the revenues will go down or further south, what's going to happen, because I think I would have a much more difficult time to deal with at the 11th hour.
Well, I had
not getting my last allocation.
I had Sean Landry and then Judge Good.
I was going to echo what Judge Walsh had mentioned. That would be my only concern. Maybe a way that we can solve that problem is revisit this issue together as a group in January for a more appropriate date. That's my concern. I don't want the projection to be aggressive and then have to reduce even further. That would be my only concern. I like the motion.
Judge Good.
I'd just like to be clear about the numbers because I understand the point, but it appears to me, if I'm reading this correctly, that our unrestricted fund balance on line 41 is projected to go up by $4 million this year. So that if we distribute the 2.6 now, we will still have a fund balance projected at the end of the year of $4 million. So it's not like we're operating with no margin. We're actually would be operating with twice the margin we have now. But the courts would be able to restore more access to justice. I would be able to reduce the time it takes for mediation right now, which is an unacceptable level now. So we would have a $4 million fund balance, if I'm reading this correctly. The difference is, do you want a $4 million fund balance or a $6.6 million fund balance? And given how impoverished we are and how we're unable to provide access to justice now, I would rather spend the money now, work with a $4 million fund balance, and trust that $4 million will be enough. But I don't see the magic between 4 versus 6.66 when we've been operating with a $2 million balance this year. So if we return the money now, we'll still have twice the balance next year that we're operating with this year.
Jake Chatters.
I guess I have a question and then probably a statement. So has the State Department of Finance given any indication what they believe a reasonable fund balance is in the trial court trust fund?
No.
Because whether we're talking $2 million or $6 million, $6 million, I'm trying to make sure I do my math right. So $2 million is 0.1% of how much we've spent. Right?
Am I
right there?
Yeah. We have the decimals in the right place?
0.1% or 0.01%? I mean, it's a very small number, whether it's 2 million or 6 million. And so I totally agree that we're all looking for funding. And when we talk about $2 million or $4 million for a court my size, that number has been a raw number. That's a lot of money. But when we look at it in the context of the whole entire fund, I do get concerned that any slight fluctuation for one of the larger counties in revenues, that $4 million could be gone pretty quickly. So I'm hesitant to make the decision now just because of slight change for someone else. I mean, I'm not going to change by that figure now, but could cause us to go the other direction. Even $6 million seems like an awful thin fund balance for $2 billion.
Rick Feldstein.
I agree. I like the motion, and I think it's just a matter of timing, hopefully. I will say, though, that with the amount of money that we're talking about, especially this early in the year, I don't think it's going to make a huge difference in any of our budgets. And is it really worth the chance of expending it now, knowing that we may have to take a bigger hit later? I think that's far worse than any benefit that a very small amount of money can make for our courts.
Can I ask one more question?
Yes.
So, first, when do you anticipate submitting the formal request, and how long does that process take before we hear back?
So, I would assume we'd have a request in probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, and by rights, they don't have to tell us until they submit their budget on January 10 as to what their position is. We would obviously be pestering, requesting feedback, but as is often the case, they don't necessarily communicate all budget decisions, you know, prior to the release of the budget to us.
Possible we will not hear back on the request.
That would be the outside. We would hope that we would know earlier, and we would press them to inform us earlier so we can, in you know, communicate to you what planning, you know, direction we would go.
And their commitment for the future, if I understood it right, was that for revenue shortfalls based on filing fees, they would make that up with state money. It's
That's
just this year that was the issue.
Well, if the gap is 50 and it was, and they funded 30 of the 50 and left us with the 20,
right.
If the 50 becomes 60, then they have not said that they're going to, they haven't made a commitment, but they would, that the 30 would become 40 and
right.
If that's the direction that it would go.
Right. Okay.
That's what their chief deputy discussed at the conference committee about future revenue declines.
Judge Walsh.
Well, as much as I like this motion, I'm hearing from our CEOs they may lose some sleep over it, and I'm counting on them. If this motion fails, I would offer a substitute motion that we revisit this very issue in January after we get the governor's budget and then take a look at it then when the numbers would be solid. But I would propose that if this doesn't come.
Ask if there's any other discussion on the motion that Judge Good has brought that we have a second on, and that would be to allocate the 2.6 or 2.7 million out to the trial courts immediately. Any other discussion on that? Then I will call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion failed.
We want by population.
Judge Walsh.
I'd be willing to cede the floor to my colleague from Contra Costa since
I would move
whatever he said eloquently, but just add that it would be in January that we take this up.
So what you're doing is moving that any unrestricted fund balance that exists in January, we take a look at distributing some or a portion or all of that.
Right. I think take a look at it is right. I'm not saying we commit to doing it because it depends. If it's $1 million, we may be too close to the edge. If it's $10 million, it may be time to do something. So I think this issue ought to be brought back to take a look at whether we should do it after we in the first Budget Advisory Committee meeting after we receive the
money. I'm not sure we really need a motion on that. We just promise you it'll be an agenda item.
I'll accept your
in
promise.
January.
Okay.
Does that satisfy everyone? We'll relook at this. It'll be on our January agenda. And we'll convene right after the governor's budget is released. Any other questions, comments on the fund condition statement of either the trust fund or the improvement and modernization fund? All right, so we will move on to agenda item number 2. You may recall that this group back in late June or July made a recommendation that the Judicial Council allocate money out to the trial court that would assume that this $22.7 million would be fully backfilled. At the July Council meeting, Zlatko and I brought that recommendation to the Judicial Council, and they rejected our recommendation. And they rejected it really on two reasons, at least in my mind, but other folks around the table certainly can talk about it. They were unwilling to engage in what they thought was deficit spending. They thought that that would be irresponsible to both the public and the trial courts. To the trial courts, they thought by telling them that you can spend this money when we're not sure whether we have it or not would be irresponsible. They also felt that it would upset our relationship with either the governor's office or the Department of Finance. So they rejected that, and they made an allocation that assumed that we would not have that backfilled, although, as you know, there are still discussions, including the deficiency request, that will go forward requesting backfill of that. In the report that went to the council, we included two options that were what we thought were the most viable options for allocation of this funding shortfall. Those can be found on page 12 of your materials, attachment 2B. It was options 3 and 4 that we brought to the council, and the council adopted option 4 and allocated the reduction consistent with how we allocate the 2% reserve. The Funding Methodology Subcommittee met last week to have a discussion about all four options because we really hadn't arrived at a recommendation. We reviewed all four options and had a discussion about whether or not we would recommend anything differently from what the council did, and the council invited us to do that. At our meeting last week, the Funding Methodology Subcommittee decided not to make an alternative recommendation, to let the recommendation that the council came up with to allocate this money pursuant to the 2% reserve process stand. And so that's the recommendation we bring to you, to not change that, to let that recommendation go forward, and then we'll have another discussion about recommendations regarding funding reductions in general. Did you want to add anything on that, Zlatko, or is there anyone else that wants to add from the council meeting or from the Funding Methodology Subcommittee? Jake.
center. So the second piece of it was related to a portion of the motion that we just discussed, sort of, that in the event that there is a, let's call it restoration, although I don't know if it was it, but let's say that $22.7 million, which at good point is not $22.7 million, instead there is an action to give some of the money back to the trial court, that giving back of that funding would be done in the same fashion as it was taken.
Any other thoughts or comments? So the recommendation to this committee is to not recommend a different reduction allocation formula to the council.
So if you need a motion, I'll move that we accept the recommendation of the working group.
All right.
That was Mike Planet.
Mike Planet. Second, David Gomeson.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I'm going to disable the dinging sound. Apparently, when folks join or drop off the call, there's a ding, and it's interfering with folks hearing the call. So, you know what I am doing when I...
The next agenda item is item 3, allocation of funding reductions. At the funding methodology subcommittee last week, we had a discussion about how should we make a recommendation about how funding reductions should be allocated among the trial courts. This was an issue that the funding methodology subcommittee put on our parking lot list, which we now call our work plan. And that is, at the time WAFM was developed, we posed the questions. We know how we're going to allocate new money. How would we allocate reductions in the future? And we had a discussion about that at the funding methodology subcommittee meeting. And the decision at the end was we should not have a policy on how we allocate funding reductions because the reductions themselves are not always consistent. They could vary in terms of how the reduction is allocated. And so the decision was not to make any general policy decision, but to view any reductions kind of on a case-by-case basis, bring it back to the funding methodology subcommittee for their analysis, bring it to this group for further discussion and analysis, but not make any general policy on how we allocate funding reductions. Comments from those of you who attended the funding methodology subcommittee meeting? Jake, did I miss anything? Questions? So our recommendation to you would be that we not recommend a general reduction allocation formula to the council. Judge Boris.
Yeah, so Judge Boris, I would move that we adopt the recommendation on page 15 under the heading recommendation.
Option two?
No.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Heading recommendation on page 15.
Thank you.
Which is to not adopt a methodology.
Correct.
Second.
I had a second by Judge Slough. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Don Will here. The next agenda item is item 4, court-appointed dependency council collections program allocation. I think we have Don Will on the line.
Yes, Judge.
All right, Don, you're up.
Okay, thank you. This report is very similar to a report that the committee reviewed for last February's Judicial Council meeting. There is a legislatively mandated program that courts collect reimbursement for court-appointed dependency counsel from parents who are able to pay. This committee, in response to that legislation, developed guidelines and an allocation methodology, which were approved in a series of Judicial Council meetings in 2013 and 2014. in at the February 2014 Judicial Council meeting, the committee recommended the allocation of the first funds from the collections based on the council methodology, and that was approved. This report recommends allocating the funds that were received in fiscal year 2013-2014 to the court, again, according to the council methodology. It also recommends when a court is when collections funding is allocated to a court, it does not have to spend it all in the year that it's allocated. However, we know there are several courts that are not yet using their allocation to reimburse court-appointed counsel, so we're also asking to that the council direct us to follow up with the courts and give them any assistance they require to be able to use these funds for court-appointed counsel reimbursement. So, Judge, if there are any questions about this item, I'd be very happy to answer them.
Any questions for Don Will on this this action item? Jake?
So, Don, can you hear me?
Yes.
So, in the, on page 17 of the material, goes into at the very bottom, it goes into your recommendation.
Yes.
So, my question is, on item one there, it's asking, or saying we may consider recommending, allocating funds remitted in 13-14 based on the methodology approved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Says number two, the surveys are due next week, which we'll use to determine whether or not courts are eligible.
Yes.
So, on number two, are you asking for a is your recommendation that we say, yes, we want to adopt the methodology, but that the final amount will be adjusted in the event a court is deemed ineligible? And is that, those go hand in hand. It's not one versus two. It's one and two.
It's one and two, and that would be in the event, I suppose, if a court said we're fiscally eligible to receive the money, we don't have a program and we don't want to have a program or can't ever have a program.
Okay, so this is Chase Chandler. So one more question, Don. Do you have any sense based on what came through in 13 and 14, what now the annual amounts look like? Because obviously the amount last year was that was multiple years. So understanding then how much is an ongoing amount versus a one-time amount as we look at the contracts we have for court-appointed counsel. And as was mentioned in the public comment, obviously any amount of money is valuable to those providers, but we're obviously hesitant to modify contracts permanently for one-time money. So if there's any sense on what that amount looked like, that'd be helpful.
The amount received this year was what we estimated we would receive in a year, which was $785,000. I think that we have a series of conference calls and materials to help courts implement a program if they have been having trouble implementing one. So my guess or my estimate would be that number will rise somewhat. We also know that dependency counsel caseloads are rising, so there should be more parents in the system willing or able to pay, so that it stands at $780,000 this year. My estimate is that will go up somewhat next year.
Any other questions for Don? So the recommendations before you are on page 17. It's a two-part recommendation, so I will pose the question whether anyone would move these two recommendations. Oh, there's a third part on page 18.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's included, correct?
Correct.
So you're asking for a motion?
I am.
I would move.
Recommendation one, two, and three?
Exactly.
Second.
John Fitton is the second. Sherry Carter was the move the motion. Judge Walsh?
I've heard Ms. Hemoff speak earlier, and I've read her letter, and I've heard her speak many other times in front of the legislature, and as always, she's eloquent, and her message is compelling. Sadly, this proposal, this motion, doesn't address her needs or the needs of children in California. The problem is not of our making. It's simply not enough. Coming from Sacramento, coming from the state budget that allows our judicial branch to provide justice that those families need. And I want to be clear, we've always been supportive of the Dependency Council, and I'm sure we will again in this coming budget year. Nothing we do here walks away from that support. This is totally unfair, but as always, it's not enough money for any of us, and so not enough for them. Our effort to support them.
Any other questions or comments on the motion? I'll call the question. All in favor of the motion to adopt recommendations 1, 2, and 3, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion carries. Regarding the issue of inadequate funding of our court-appointed dependency councils and, as Ms. Hemoff indicated today, kind of the disparity in how those funding allocations are made. We are putting together a work group to work, kind of look, take a look at how court-appointed dependency council allocations are made. As you know, there is a methodology that's based on caseload that determines a funding need, but that's not how allocation of the money is made. It's based on historic funding levels. So pursuant to our discussions last week at the Funding Methodology Subcommittee, we are putting together a work group to take a look at how allocations are made and to determine whether or not there ought to be changes in the allocation formula. That work group, Don will staff it, and that work group will be headed by Sherry Carter. Also, the folks that have agreed to participate on the work group are David Yamasaki, Judge Cope, Judge Masanaga, and Kim Flenner. So they will begin taking a look at that methodology. Our goal is to try to bring any recommendation to this body in December or end of November so that the council can consider it in December. So we are going to take a look at that. Anything else on that issue, Jake? Nope. All right. We are at item 5, adjustments to IMS allocations for education programs. Do we have Gavin Lane either here or on the phone?
Yeah, I'm on the phone, Judge Earl.
All right, Gavin, go right ahead.
Thank you. This is page 34, item 5, attachment 5A. It's a proposal to adjust 11 line items of the approved allocation, IMF allocation procedure. There's no impact to the total allocation amount. It's a zero impact. What it does is it enables us to implement the education plan that was approved by the council at its April 24th meeting. The current line items, they still reflect the estimates that were made for trial court budget advisory committee at its November 2013 meeting, before the governing committee and the curriculum committees had done their analysis and the governing committee had, you know, prioritized the work or the recommendations of the various committees. And so really these adjustments to the allocations, they just provide greater accuracy than we had available in November. We'd intended subsequent to the council meeting in April to bring this forward on the agenda of your June meeting, but there were bigger things going on around reductions, and so it just didn't get on at that time. So this is really just a request to enable us to implement the plan as it was ultimately developed and prioritized by the governing committee.
And I would add, in terms of the general management of the Improvement and Modernization Fund, it was a delegation of maximum up to 20% adjustments in the current year of any approved allocations that the administrative director was provided by the council and at the recommendation of the Budget Advisory Committee and the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee. these are of a magnitude that exceed that amount, and therefore they must come back to the council. And so as part of our process, bringing it back to the Budget Advisory Committee for awareness of the adjustments and to hopefully make a recommendation for that, these revisions as proposed for this program. So any questions of Gavin? And we have Kirchhoff here as well to respond to any questions.
Judge Walsh?
This looks like a rare opportunity where we can do some good and not spend a dime doing it, so I move approval.
I think Judge Trent Acosta seconds. Any discussion, further discussion? All in favor of adopting the recommendation on page 34? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin. Next is item number 6. We're about 15 minutes ahead of schedule, so that is good. Page 39 can find proposed changes to the supplemental funding process, and a group led ably by Mike Planet will go through the details. But just to remind you, this was an issue that was discussed previously by this body, and we took it to the council for potential changes. And it was the council had a good conversation about the issue and asked us to reconsider some factors I think Mike will discuss. So that's why it's coming back to this body for consideration of some revised alternatives that we discussed at length in it and had some feedback from the Department of Finance about potential changes to the process. So that's the sort of the backdrop to this issue. And I'll turn it over to Mike to lead us through the issue.
Hi, it's Mike Planet. So you all remember a couple meetings back, our recommendation to the Judicial Council was to move up the reallocation of the unspent money to January, and then a request, and then another recommendation that we seek funding for the gap there, and to we had a couple of them having to do with the 2% and 1%. Council and their discussion, I think characterized the concern is if all the money is reallocated back in January and there's an emergency between January and June 30th, and if the Department of Finance has enacted the resource, then what happens there? And that was I think it was not just a small court concern, but certainly medium and large courts could find themselves in the same box. So sent back to us, convened a couple calls of our working group, and you'll see our recommendations on page 41. So what we're suggesting is to continue to move up the redistribution of the funds, anything that's not allocated, approved for emergency funding by January. What we're suggesting is, and I think we're anticipating that there will be some requests this year, although we haven't seen them. But the notion of the recommendation now is, I'm sorry, Judge.
They're coming.
So the recommendation before you today is the idea that we would allocate back 75% of the remaining funds in January and leaving about 25% that would cover emergencies until March 31st, I think, is the final deadline.
Up to
March 15th. And that still leaves the gap of what happens in emergency between March 15th and June 30th. So to that end, we looked at the notion of borrowing or a loan to those courts. And so, Patrick, can you kind of walk us through that process, or we need to wait for Z? Because they had some discussions with finance. But let me go back to the initial question about the initial recommendation about the 75% remaining in January, remaining 25% after March. Any questions about or discussions, comments about that recommendation?
Is that option 1B on the materials on page 41?
Yes, it is. Okay. Z, can you walk through option 1C?
Okay. Yes, thank you. 1C relates to this, as we call it, a dark period where there's that 2% process doesn't exist. And it didn't exist. It doesn't exist now, and we're sort of struggling as to how we could remedy that problem. And this was why we sort of discussed this with the Department of Finance, because we felt that there was an opportunity to use the cash advance loan language that was put into the budget a couple of years ago to deal with cash shortfalls, and see if we could use that not just for cash shortfall, but also for budget shortfall, because inevitably, if you have a budget shortfall, you don't have the cash there either. So this sort of we have to deal with this. The language in the statute describes having a balanced budget at the time that you can make these applications, and in theory, there is an initial budget that's it loaded into as part of your Schedule I process. Balance, and if it's not, then you do your 2% process, and that's known. But if at some point down the road in the sort of the last half of the fiscal year, if there's circumstances that cause you to fall out of balance, how do we deal with that? We thought, take a loan using that loan authority, but then look to the next year's 2% process to then be able to fund the court to pay that back possibly. So that would be sort of the interim step when there is no budgetary augmentation opportunity at the end of the fiscal year, and then you pick it up when you start the next process to determine, and it would be evaluated to see whether or not there were circumstances that the court could manage it. So that was one idea, was that you use this loan process and use next year's 2% as a backstop to be able to cover that. And that the requests would be reviewed by a working group, because in essence, as it stands now, loans for cash come to our office and we look at those and do those on a mechanical basis, because there's in essence, it's not, it has anything to do with budget, and it doesn't commit the council to anything because it has to be within the allocation you're getting. It's just a timing issue. This, in theory, if approved, would potentially commit the council to allocating funding. And that we didn't want to do as staff to the council, but we felt we needed to have some process that involved the Budget Advisory Committee to have made some determination as to the validity of the budgetary problem that's created, and it's a sort of a precursor to the review that would be done in the next fiscal year. I see Judge Wesley has a question.
Before this, a court could go directly to the Judicial Council and request supplemental funds, and it would come before the council. So if I read this correctly, it won't get to the council until it goes through the trial court budget working group. Is that correct?
The sort of March, April,
May. Request for emergency funding to get into this 2% would not go directly to the council. It would come to the trial court budget working group before that. Is that correct?
During the period when there's no process for it to go to the council, sort of like a pre-scrub of the requests.
So you would treat those requests before the money's distributed differently than those after? Because in a way, that's what we're saying, that the ones before go directly to the council, but the ones from March to June go to this group first.
Yeah. Now, just so you know, I've discussed this with Judge Earle, is that even the 2% now, it's not in the council process, is we are pulling together a group to help us as staff ensure that those 2% requests are looked at. So we're actually going to kind of, it'll be on both ends of the process.
So just that. Let me jump in there. Currently, the 2% reserve policy does not require the request to come through this body,
right.
And they haven't in the past.
Right.
But the process that includes that was developed by this body. Acknowledge that. So this body didn't ask for it to come back to this body as part of the procedure, or even a small subgroup. It was just so.
But what Flacco has asked, and I've agreed, is to have a small group from this body review the 2% emergency request this year. There may be as many as 8 of them, and so he has asked that a small body help his office review those. Sherry.
So the reason I think it's important to identify these things is because if we find that there's a training issue, and I had made this request at the subcommittee, and so I'll make it now as well, I think that a report of the types of requests should be made to this group, because not which county, but I would be interested in what kinds of requests they are, because if we see they're a training issue more than an emergency funding issue, we should identify that and provide adequate training or support to those courts that may have not experienced that before. So I would be curious, if we know what some are in the hopper, what the requests are that are emergency in nature. Do we know that?
We have only received one today, and I think I just opened it to see what it was, how much it was. But they're due on the 1st.
Okay.
So we have not received them.
I just think that the criteria to be an emergency is so discreet that it would be hard for an emergency, but if it's unanticipated issues, that might be something that we can help with, but also more long-term, help with the training and trying to ensure that they have the...
Let me ask, Sherry, are you... I don't want to read into this, but are you making a motion to amend the 2% policy to have any to have a recommendation from this group go before the council?
Yes, I think that's a good suggestion. I haven't really gone that far. I think Zlatko's saying no.
No, I'm not saying no. I'm saying that the timing, getting them on the 1st and then having an actual report to the council that has gone through EMP, which has a public meeting, to convene this group to make a recommendation, I think is logistically impossible. It needs to be a small group that can recommend on behalf of. That's what I'm saying. I didn't want.
You can
right.
I guess I would just hate to see something not get approved at the council level because it doesn't meet the criteria. If it's something that could be solved, yeah, somebody said solved. You know, by education, by training, by perhaps giving some alternative financing options. So that's all. It's just really a matter of trying to assist.
Yeah. That's why I asked Judge Earl if that's something we could do. We spoke to the executive office and felt that getting input from experts was absolutely helpful to us, especially because there might be some more difficult operational questions that are best asked by operational experts, notwithstanding our knowledge.
So that would be my question.
I saw Judge Boris's hand up, and then I think I saw Mike Planet.
Yeah, Tom Boris, I was just going to go back to what Zlatko explained to us, and I guess my only hesitation would be is there's going to be a different rule after March 15th for me as a county trial court to get a loan. But am I being lulled into a false sense of security that the same reason I was given a loan will let me go before the judicial council to pay back that loan? That's my only concern with the two different type of process, is that if there's no way for me to get money after March 15th, which there isn't today, right? I mean, there isn't today. If we're going to put in a loan process, do we need to do something to make sure that the person who takes the loan knows it's not a done deal for a repayment of that loan when they go before the judicial council?
And that's why we suggested this budget advisory committee group to also do the same evaluation to do that. And so I think it works well because we did a training a month ago about cash management. And so there's now a heightened expectation that you're more – truckers are more actively managing cash. So I think that we're trying to hit that educational need in advance of problems. Jody is
clarified, because there is already a process in place to seek advances at the start of the fiscal year. So the criteria for that advance would be different than the criteria from March 15th to June, because these are emergencies and should follow the same criteria as the emergency policy. So you'd end up having two kind of cash advance policies, one for an emergency and one which is your normal at the start of the year, I got to make payroll
cash flow, cash advance. Yeah. In managing finances, you have cash flow that you can still live within your total budget over the and it's just a timing issue. And then there's both budgetary problem and the cash problem that is attendant with a budgetary problem. So, yeah, when we're talking March 15th to June 30th, if someone has a budget problem, they'll obviously have a cash problem. That's how we use that cash loan process. And then the budget, that there is a sort of an intertwining there.
I want to make a distinction of
right. Right.
Yeah. I saw Mike Planet's hand.
Yeah, my only caution is I don't have a problem with that process at the outset. But my concern is the March 15th to June 30th, which is such a small window. If this is approved, we have to recognize this has to be a small group that moves quickly and gets going. Won't we also have I'll just leave it there.
So I would make that motion that we develop a small group, maybe two or three, that would work with judicial counsel staff to review the emergency request throughout the year, not just for this period.
And I saw Mary Beth Todd's hand up.
Yeah, all I was going to do was just to clarify I would use the analogy that this little working group that would look at when we're on the March to June side of the process, it's kind of like a preliminary hearing. We can't tell you what the outcome of the trial is going to be, but we can say this looks like an appropriate type of request that would qualify for 2% funding so that you know going in, whether it looks likely you will get that funding in the subsequent year with which to pay back the loan, but also make it clear that if it does not get approved, that there has to be a repayment plan. Now, the other question I had, Vladko, is I guess I don't recall us really discussing in depth this whole balanced budget issue, but you're satisfied that if it's an emergency or unanticipated expense that kind of gets us out of balance, we're still okay. Okay.
Even on those
loans. Yeah, and the Department of Finance has been well aware, because at our monthly meetings, part of our ongoing message is stories about cash problems, budget problems created by the 1%. And so they're well aware, and they've asked us and this group to come forward with what are the changes that we would want to see them pursue as far as budget trailer bill language, say in the spring, going to the legislature. They recognize the problem they've created, but then they put it on us to solve it. And I would say is that when we talked to one of the options is reducing the 2% value to some lesser amount. And I said, well, if we reduce it by 1%, can we bump our 1% up to 2%? And they said, no, that's not the process that we want to engage. So, trying to see if we could have moved that around a little bit. They weren't interested in that. But they do want to see from us a thoughtful process change that includes not only the 2% process, but also the loan process, so that it works, notwithstanding the problems that have been created.
I have Jake and then Mike Planet. Mike.
So, if I understand, Sherry's motion is we would amend option 1B by adding the last, basically copying, cutting and pasting the same last sentence in 1C.
Oh.
All right.
Yeah, we can do that.
So if that's the motion, I would second that.
And I have Judge DeSantos.
Yes. I agree with Sherry's motion, 2 to 3. That's what I'm concerned about. I would want a little bit more, only to make sure that the small, medium courts are represented to have an idea as to what an emergency may not be for a big court, but an emergency could be for, so possibly 5.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion, which is to adopt option 1B with the amendment that these court requests would be reviewed and approved by a trial court budget advisory committee working group? Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Before we move on, are there volunteers to participate in this work group? And let me say, I've got Tanya, but let me say, one, you have to be available starting next week because you heard there's a very shortened time frame. So if you're on vacation next week or the week after, it's not going to help us. And if you think your court is going to be submitting a request for emergency funding, you're probably not the best person to serve on this work group. That doesn't mean that we might occasionally run into that problem. We can rotate people off. But with that in mind, you have to be available very quickly and for some pretty in-depth conversations. So are there folks that are willing to participate in that small work group? Just raise your hand so I can get your name down. Don't all jump at once. I've got Judge Boris, Sherry Carter, Tanya, Mary Beth, Sean,
Mike Roddy,
Rebecca Fleming, that would be great. Who did I see? Did Mike have it?
Mike Roddy did.
Mike Roddy. Anyone else? I think we've probably got. Thank you. I'll go back to my plan.
So now option 1C, any further discussion, any other discussion or comments from the members of the working group on that? So I would move 1C, adoption 1C.
Judge Mike Planet moved it. Judge Good, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
So number two, options for supplemental funding for process changes in the budget year. You recall last, our recommendation to the council was to just seek repeal of government code section. I know that in our little working group, we've had some other ideas, some other suggestions that I was my categorization, I would categorize them as a more strategic approach to address this bill and this approach in this legislation. And so you'll see the two recommendations there. That's why we're recommending option 2A, is that we work with SEAC, the PJ's PCLC, to recommend amendments to the government code sections to be included as trailer bill language to the 2015 budget, which may include 2B, but ideally we'll come up with a more comprehensive strategic package that hopefully we'll have a good chance of surviving the trailer bill process. So any other conversation, discussion about this one? Then I will move option 2A.
Seconded by
Tanya.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. And we have on page 42, item number 3, options for minimum operating and emergency reserve policy.
So was that mine too?
Absolutely.
Oh. Well, you'll see in our recommendation 3B would be to extend suspension of the minimum operating and emergency fund balance for 2 fiscal years.
Then the keep hope alive motion, and I'll make it.
Yeah.
I'll second that motion.
Yeah. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, we have finished through item 6 on our agenda. We will be taking a break and reconvening the call at 1 o'clock sharp. Thank you.